I'm speaking with Stan Perkins, the son of the legendary guitarist, songwriter, rock and roll pioneer, Carl Perkins, about the relationship between his father and George Harrison of the Beatles, and also between Stan himself and George. On September 15th, Beatles at the Ridge, a festival in Walnut Ridge, commemorates the fact that the Beatles landed in Walnut Ridge for a brief time and then returned after the weekend. That's a pretty well-known story by now, back in 1964 in Walnut Ridge because of the airport there, and they were en route to a dude ranch in Missouri. Also in Walnut Ridge, part of that festival is the commemoration of what's known as the Rock and Roll Highway. Highway 67 has been designated as the Rock and Roll Highway because of the many great rock and roll musicians who played there back in the earliest days of rock and roll, the mid-1950s. Nine figures will be honored on that guitar walk initially, with more to come later. But those include, and I won't name them all because someone will escape my memory, but those will include Conway Twitty, of course Elvis Presley, Wanda Jackson, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins. I was reading a great article that George Jarrett wrote in, or a recent edition of the Jonesboro Sun local newspaper, and he interviewed you, Stan, and he was mentioning that you said a lot of people don't realize that Elvis Presley didn't originate the song Blue Suede Shoes. He didn't write it. He did record it. But the first person to record it was Carl Perkins, who wrote the song.
That's correct.
Another one that comes to mind is a very well-known country song recorded by Johnny Cash, and that was Daddy Sang Bass. And
that's correct.
And your father wrote that very well-known song.
He did. He wrote that in 1968. In fact, he wrote it in a dressing room. He was writing a song, and John walked by and said, and asked him, said, "Carl, whose song is that?" He said, "John, just write." He said, "Finish it." He said, "I won't record that song right there." And John really went to head-to-head with the Columbia Records because they didn't want to release the song because it had the religious content to it. John had just scored really big with a big comeback with Folsom Prison Blues, the live album that was cut in Folsom Prison. But he stood his ground. He said, "No, that's going to be my next song." And Columbia, they gave in, Columbia Record Company, and they put it out.
What do you remember? What stories can you tell us about your dad as a songwriter? Are there any particular stories that you remember or you can relate?
Well, you know, Mike, I worked with my dad for 22 years as a man. He was one of these type of guys, he couldn't collaborate with anyone. You know, he did it all himself. He would say what I later defined to him. I told him, I said, you have brainstorms. I said, something happens in your head. I said, because he pretty much write a song within 15 minutes' time. He could, when it hit him, when the idea hit him, he'd go run for a guitar, wherever he had one at, and he'd had it, the melody already going in his head. He'd sit there and fool the guitar a little bit, then he'd turn the guitar over where he could put the piece of paper on the back of it to write. He couldn't read a note of music, but that's the way he wrote. And I never will forget, in the early 90s, I used to go to his home pretty much every day. I would just share a first cup of coffees.
Now, let's clarify, I'm sorry, you and your dad lived in separate houses in Jackson, Tennessee.
Right. Okay. But I would go to his home every morning. In the last 10 years of his life, I did all the managing and booking and everything. So always we had business to talk about on a day-to-day basis. And on this particular day that I went, he said, "You know," he said, I got there like it. I usually got there around 8 o'clock in the morning. And he said, "I've just written a song." I said, "You have?" He said, "Yeah, I want you to listen to it." And he started singing this song, and it turned out to be the song Silver and Gold, which was a big hit record for Dolly Parton in like 91, 92. Anyway, he's doing this song. I said, "Well, when did you write that song?" He said, "Oh, just a minute ago." I said, "So you wrote it since you got up this morning?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "What made you write that song? What happened? What triggered your creativeness He said, well, he said, I reached down to get my pants, to put them on after I got out of bed. And he said, I dropped them. And he said, I reached, and said, when I dropped them, said, the chains fell out of them. And said, I reached down to get the chains, and he said, I pulled my back. And he said, I thought to myself, well, now, why am I going to all this trouble? There ain't nothing but silver and gold.
Wow.
And I said, and that's what started the song, with you hurting your back reaching for the change. He said, that was it. And I mean, it was a big country hit record for her. Dolly came to our home here in Jackson and stayed for about a week, and her and my dad wrote songs, and he did this song for her. Brought tears to her eyes. She said, I want to record that song. So that was the kind of songwriter he was. He wrote a thing for Patsy Cline that was a big record, like in 1962, a thing called So Wrong, a ballad. He wasn't just in the rockabilly thing as far as writing goes. You know, he could branch out, but that's the way he was. He was a one-man show when it come to writing songs. He wasn't much for collaborating with anybody. It was just him, himself, and his guitar and a piece of paper and a pen.
Well, I think a true writer is going to have to write, and it's just going to come out of him or her.
That's it. I think that the ones that are truly gifted, that's the way that it happens. It happens, and it's pretty quick. I know that's the way Blue Suede Shoes was born, at 2 o'clock one morning in a government project house. And from hearing a boy tell a girl, the couple were jitterbugging in front of him, said, don't step on my suedes. And then he goes home just with him and the guitar and writes Blue Suede Shoes.
There's a legend, I guess, that happened in a nightclub somewhere here in East Arkansas. I don't know if that's true. Do you?
Well, you know, there's been various stories told. I know, but what I've heard my dad say, John Cash was really the first one to give him an idea about writing a song about a pair of shoes. John told him, said, when he was in the Air Force, there was this man, and said when he'd go on leave, said he'd be dressed in his, dressed, what they call their dress uniform or whatever, when he'd go out on town. And said he'd have on them black-looking, combat-looking boots, and said he was just joking. He said, I'm going out partying tonight. I got my blue suede shoes on. And anyway, Dad said that back in those days, they were doing a lot of their shows in East Arkansas. And Elvis was all three of them, my dad, John Cash, and Elvis in eastern Arkansas. But he said it didn't register with him. He said he just couldn't see writing a song about a pair of shoes. He told John, he said, what do you say about a pair of shoes? There ain't nothing to say about them. Until he played a dance. And he said that it was here in Jackson, it was a high school prom dance. And that this young guy jumped back while this couple were jitterbugging and said he said to the girl, said, don't step on my suedes. And he said, I couldn't get that out of my mind. And he said, we went ahead and did the rest of the performance that night, or dance, whatever it was. And then my mom and he, along with myself and my sister, were living in a government project house here in Jackson, Tennessee. And he went home and went to that government project house, and it had no paper. The only thing he could think to get to write on, it said he went in search of paper, but the only thing he could find was a sack that had three potatoes in it. Took the potatoes out, flattened the sack out, and had a pencil, and wrote the words, don't step on my blue suede shoes, and he spelled suede, S-W-A-D-E. I've got the original lyrics. And he said the only way he could think of how to start it off was the nursery rhyme, one for the money, two for the show. And he said after I came up with that, he said everything else just flowed with it.
Number four was, two for the money, three for the show. Four to get ready. Now, Go Cat Go. It's kind of reflected the whole rockabilly culture
of
the time.
Well, it did, but that's not the original way he wrote it. He wrote it, one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready, now go, man, go. He made a mistake. They did three takes of that song. he did a portion of the song over the phone to Sam Phillips, and Sam told him, said, get you and your brothers, and you come to Memphis, and let's record that song. And on the first two takes of it, he says, go, man, go. And then Sam comes back to him, and he tells him on one of the takes, but the dad goes, tells him, said, I messed up. And he said, what do you mean you messed up? He said, I said, go, cat, go, instead of go, man, go. He said, no, we're leaving it, go, cat, go. And that's, you know, that's how that happened.
Sam Phillips' uncanny instinct for knowing what might make a hit.
He did. But I think in the case of Blue Suede Shoes, you got to realize, pre-Blue Suede Shoes, with Elvis on Sun Records, that Elvis' success on Sun was more of a regional thing of the South, in the South. He'd never really had a national record on Sun. But with Blue Suede Shoes, it was released January 2nd, 1956. I think that even Sam Phillips was overwhelmed by the success and how quick that it happened with Blue Suede Shoes.
Now, are you speaking of your father's recording of Blue Suede Shoes?
My dad's version. Carl Perkins' version of Blue Suede Shoes came out in January of 56. Elvis' first release of on RCA Victor was Heartbreak Hotel. It came out the same day on RCA Victor. Elvis' Heartbreak Hotel did. By March, they were both swapping one and two positions in all the major charts across America. My dad's version of Blue Suede Shoes went on to sell in 1956 almost 2 million copies. Elvis recorded Blue Suede Shoes in August of 1956, and it came out originally on what they called an EP, which was a 45 record that had two songs on each side. Four songs consisted of the whole record, and Blue Suede Shoes was part of that. Now, Elvis had done Blue Suede Shoes previously on, like, Milton Berle's show and things, some TV and some live appearances that he did, but Elvis's version of Blue Suede Shoes got to like number 20 in the charts. It was nowhere near as big as Carl Perkins's version did. Of course, as years gone by, you know, most or a lot of people, when you say Blue Suede Shoes, they thank Elvis Presley because of, you know, how big that he got, and that song kind of got under his umbrella of success, you know. But it was my dad who had the biggest version of it in 56.
And no doubt he has performed it at the clubs here in Arkansas that are part of the Rock and Roll Highway.
In fact, there's a little town, and I've never been there, but it's Bono, Arkansas.
Yes, it's right next to Jonesboro. And
the significance of Bono, Arkansas. My dad was booked to play there before Blue Suede Shoes had really started getting national attention, and he fulfilled his contract to play at some club there in Bono, Arkansas. And I mean, Blue Suede Shoes was riding the top of the charts when he performed at that club.
Let me interject just a minute. There was no club in Bono, but there was a high school gym, and that's where
it might have
he
been
played.
The high school,
yes, sir.
Gym,
yes, sir. I'm from here.
But it was in Bono, Arkansas, where he played. In fact, he left Bono, Arkansas after the performance there and was driving to New York to appear on the Perry Como show, which was a national television show at that time, to do Blue Suede Shoes. And of course, before he got to New York, there was in a near-fatal car accident that put him out of commission for about 6 weeks, laid up in a hospital in Delaware. Anyway, Bono, Arkansas was one of the first places that he performed doing the hit version of Blue Suede Shoes.
It's phenomenal because here it was a small town, and then, as you say, your dad went from virtually one night in Bono to New York to perform. It was the leap from playing gymnasiums and honky-tonks in little towns to being on the national stage, if you will, wasn't that long of a time. It was pretty quick, wasn't it, for your dad?
It was a pretty quick thing, and about a lot of the communities around eastern Arkansas. And this worked this way for my dad, Elvis, and Johnny Cash. Because, like I said, they did a package thing, the three of them. And they really couldn't play anywhere around Memphis. There wasn't any places that, you know, that could make a little money playing. And they had to go across the river because in eastern Arkansas was where the places were to play. And my dad said, he said, we were lucky a lot of times if, you know, we made a few dollars, $5 or $6 a piece a night to play. And he said, but after each show, whatever we did, he said, Elvis would be starved to death and said he loved these old truck stops. And said, said we'd end up at a truck stop somewhere, and he said Elvis would pretty much blow whatever he made on buying cheeseburgers for everybody. And he said, back in those days, he said, you know, he said, we didn't, none of us had no money, so we was poor. And said, he said, you know, we have, he said, as far as our wardrobe went, he said, we each had one sport coat apiece. He said, but we tried to fool the public. He said, we're all about the same size, me, John, and Elvis. And he said, we'd swap up trying to make people think we had more than one coat.